Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:21 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is it's still summertime and it's November 1st. Well, we've just had Tesla's earnings and they have burned more money than they were anticipating in the last quarter. And the shares at present are down about an additional 5%. That is weighing on the Nasdaq future, which had just about unwound its initial decline. I'll pull up the chart in a moment, but that it had opened higher, closed lower. This was Tesla today. It was down $10, but that was before the market shut. It's down an additional 5% in here today, so that would take it down to just about the $300 level. And this is the region of the trend mean. It needs to find support in this area if it is going to remain reasonably consistent. $300 represents the upper side of the underlying range, and it's now also in the region of the trend mean. So if Tesla is going to bounce, it would want to be getting about it tomorrow, or we're going to be in for a much more volatile period. Tesla, of course, is a volatile share, and there is already speculation on Twitter about when would be the best buying opportunity. But this is a big point, is that Tesla is incredibly expensive. It's a B-minus credit, and they are pushing back the date when they're going to be making money, whereas Ford, which has been trending lower for 3 years, has just broken its broken back above the trend mean. It's challenging the progression of lower rally highs. It's got a PE of something like 6 or 7, and it yields over 3%. So one has to question at least the incredible bullishness that's attached to Tesla versus what is a rather ambivalent attitude towards shares like Ford, not least when you've had Fiat Chrysler and General Motors surging on the upside. It would suggest that there's at least some potential for a company like Ford to do better. And that also helps to, I think, really influence the point, or drive the point home, that we are at a period of time where some shares have done spectacularly well, despite the fact that they are at really rather, frothy valuations. But that doesn't mean that there isn't still value out there. It's just that, just like at any other point in a market which has been doing very well, the things that have been doing well tend to get a lot of the focus, whereas those that haven't don't tend to make a lot of headlines. And that is beginning to change, for example, in the nickel market. And this is the ETFS chart, and it has been ranging for about 2 years and has now broken out to new recovery highs. Considering that even within the context of the decline from the peak in 2011, that it is less than a third of the value it was then, and that's before we even begin to think about where the peak was back at the top of the bull market in 2007, which was north of 60 on this ETF, that this is only the beginning of a base breakout. And nickel has been a wallflower relative to the other industrial metals. The LME metals index is comprised of the six industrial metals, and it has been on a recovery trajectory for almost 2 years already. So what is it that's helping to drive this move in nickel? Well, it is electric cars, and obviously Tesla has benefited enormously from being the first mover in terms of getting a car on the road that is driven by a battery that people really aspire to own. But we're now seeing much more demand for electric vehicles, and the number of battery factories that are under construction is going to make the gigafactory look like a small beer, and most particularly in Asia. So that is going to drive demand for the kinds of metals that are lithium-ion batteries are comprised of, which are primarily copper, nickel, lithium, and cobalt. It's quite difficult to invest in cobalt, not least because the leading source of cobalt is the Democratic Republic of Congo. But cobalt is often found with nickel, so by investing in nickel you are often also getting some leverage to the cobalt price. Lithium is not a particular particularly liquid market, but we definitely see that some of the most popular vehicles for investing in lithium, like FMC or SQM, have been done really rather well over the last 18 months, and they are somewhat overbought and susceptible to some consolidation at the present moment, but in a generally bullish environment nonetheless. And in this kind of environment, pullbacks can be viewed as entry opportunities. Meanwhile, the copper price has been a little bit firmer in here today, but if what it needs to do is to continue to hold that $3 level. So far, this has been a relatively similar size consolidation to what we saw at the beginning of the year, and as long as that remains the case and it is trading above the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we look at, for example, copper producers like Antofagasta, then it has been ranging around the psychological 1,000p level for the last few months. This is a relatively similar sized consolidation to what we saw earlier this year and at the end of 2016. And as long as that remains the case, we can also give the benefit of the doubt to the upside there. So we are certainly getting renewed interest in the industrial metal complex, and lumber prices were limit up again in here today. They are increasingly overextended relative to the trend mean, but it's probably going to require a limit down day to really suggest that we have hit a peak of more than short-term significance for what is an increasingly accelerating market. And I think sugar is probably benefiting from what has been relative strength in the oil market. It is right at the upper side of its base formation, and it was a little bit weaker in here today, but there is the potential that it could break on the upside here. So I think it is increasingly worth watching. So this was also an interesting day in terms of the action that we've seen in the precious metal markets. And I've written a little piece today asking just a simple question: why do people buy precious metals? And of course, there are any number of reasons, but one of the most important is that it is an uncorrelated asset, and that considering that we have valuations that are pretty high, and that we have some uncertainty about the trajectory of interest rates, and indeed on just how much additional liquidity central banks are going to be prepared to send into the global economy, then it isn't a bad time to be thinking about the potential that we should be thinking about what kinds of non-correlated assets could offer some kind of diversification. And certainly the precious metals fall into that category, and silver in particular was up by about 45 cents in here today, bouncing from the region of 16p dollars, excuse me, $16. It bounced from that region pretty impressively back in early October, and has done so again in here today. When we look at it on a weekly basis, then we can quite clearly see that this approximates the region of the trend mean. But trend mean doesn't mean an awful lot, because the price has been pretty much going sideways for most of this year. But as long as it is holding at the higher low from this week, and then relative to what we saw earlier in October, then we can give the potential for at least higher to lateral ranging the benefit of the doubt. Platinum has got a much more well-defined range between about 900 and 1,000, and it is now bouncing from the lower side of that range, which is increasing the potential that it would go back up towards the upper side of the range. And the gold shares, represented by the Spider Gold Shares ETF, are back in the region of the trend mean, and this is a natural area where one can anticipate that support might begin to be found. And Sibanye Gold, which has been one of the biggest dividend payers in the precious metals market, has been pretty much range bound all of this year, but it is bouncing once more now as it approaches the end of the Stillwater acquisition. and it is now right in the region of the trend mean. If it can sustain a move above $6, well, then we'll be talking about a base formation completion. In the nickel market, we are looking at base formation completion, and Sherritt retraced all of last week's rather sharp decline this week and is coming back up towards the highs that we saw at the end of last year. And this does represent a high beta play on the nickel price, which is itself breaking up out of a range. Well, the reason that commodities are doing better is because we're back in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. And of course, that is being driven by what is increasingly a rather sanguine attitude towards what's happening in China. That is despite the fact that we are seeing that the current, or I guess if we want to call it the new administration, are looking increasingly towards clamping down on individual freedoms. But the stock market has been really quite steady. And they are still growing, and they are not tightening. And as long as China is not tightening, and the Japanese are not tightening, and the Europeans are not tightening, then we can conclude that the chances are that the quantity of liquidity that is flowing out into the global economy is likely to remain a significant factor. But what we can begin to see now is that the pace of the advance in the total number or quantity of money being produced by central banks is going sideways. And that means that the global markets are heavily influenced by any kind of deterioration. So I'm looking at this quite regularly, because if we do see that, for example, the fact that the ECB is moving towards tapering, which is going to put additional, I think, importance on the monetary policy then of both Japan and China, what they decide to do is going to be of increasing importance for the consistency of global stock market uptrends. When we look at the S&P 500 over the last decade, it is somewhat overextended relative to the trend mean at the present moment. And if this very consistent trend we've had for the last year is to remain consistent, then we are due some pause in consolidation. That's despite the fact, or in spite of the fact, that it was at a new all-time high in here today. The Dow Jones has paused, and it also moved to a new intraday high today, but wasn't quite able to hold it. So far, this range has been really incredibly inert and quite similar to that range that we saw at the end of September. But we have had such an enormous, really, it's not an enormous move, but it's a very impressive move over the last 6 weeks, that we do have an overbought condition relative to the trend mean, that it has done really very well. And it has the beginnings of a parabolic look to it, that it would be much healthier for the market if it were to consolidate and allow the trend mean to catch up. But if that does not occur, then we have to conclude that this market is accelerating. The Nasdaq is likely to be weighed upon by Tesla in early trading tomorrow, but it has done really very well over the last five sessions, and again, it is also susceptible to some pause in consolidation. But I think one of the more important points is that it has finally cleared that 6,000 point level, and that area should now offer a region of support. And Bitcoin was also in positive territory in here today, and took out the $6,500 level, and it continues to represent a very impressive bull market. And a point that I've made on many previous occasions is that despite the fact that it might now be rallying in anticipation of the release of or the creation of a futures and options market for Bitcoin, that until we actually get the majority of trading dominated by futures and options, that the log scale chart will be the most appropriate way to analyze it. And the log scale chart very clearly shows us this progression of ranges one above another in a series of steps. And as long as it is moving in that step sequence uptrend, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, which would suggest that 5,000 is now a key area of support within the context of this really still rather impressive bull market. And oil prices have paused around the $60 area, and they were just about in key reversal territory today, but closed off the low. So if you were to get out your magnifying glass, then you could say that it did make a new high and close below the low of the previous day, but only just. And a downside follow-through tomorrow would be required to confirm that we've seen a peak of short-term significance. $60 is a big psychological level, and we know that a good deal of additional supply becomes economic at these levels, so it is a natural area where we can anticipate at least some pause, but it would really need to break the short-term progression of higher reaction lows to question the near-term upward bias. And considering that we have some really rather important news flow coming through over the next few days, that the Federal Reserve today said that their decision not to hike rates was unanimous, but we're going to find out what the Bank of England does tomorrow. And the pound has paused around this 132.5 area today in anticipation of what the Bank of England is going to say tomorrow. The euro has been pausing below 120 for much of the last few months, but it pulled back rather sharply last week, and it has so far failed to rally. And this continues to look like a reversion back towards the upper side of that underlying trading range. It's almost now back towards the region of the trend mean, and the big question is whether it is going to find support in that area. Then we have the release of the Republican Party's tax plan tomorrow, and that's probably part of the reason that stock markets in Wall Street at least paused in here today. I think it is an open question just how ambitious they can hope to be in terms of the tax plan, so far, that hasn't really influenced what's happening in Europe. Europe is much more influenced by what's happening with the euro. And the DAX was strong in pretty dynamic form in here today and is breaking away from the upper side of this range in pretty dynamic fashion, but it is increasingly overextended. So the first clear downward dynamic is going to represent a peak of at least near-term significance. But considering the upside potential, or at least the catch-up potential that Europe has, that any pause is likely to be just that, the medium-term potential for recovery in Europe, I think it has to be given the benefit of the doubt, and not least because it has faced such a large number of political challenges, and each one of them has been resolved in a reasonably favourable manner, and not least the most recent in Catalonia, where reimposing direct control from Madrid has passed off relatively quietly, and that was certainly not a foregone conclusion. So the IBEX has broken the progression of lower rally highs since close to the beginning of this year, and confirming support in the region of that 10,000 level. And the Indian market has continued to pause after groundbreaking decision to recapitalize the state-owned banks. When we look at the weekly chart, it is very powerful. The Nifty moving up to 105, going up 105 points in here today. The chances are that we're going to get a pause in the next 100 points around 10,500, but this is a very big deal for the banking sector. And it is a further evidence that the not only are we back in I think good stead in terms of the non-performing loans for the banking sector, but also that it's a further demonstration of improving governance in India, and the banks have broken up out of this short-term range. So India is now, I think, back on the front foot, having spent the last 6 months not really doing much of anything. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.